I'm David Schreiner Khan, and this is Smashing the Plateau. No matter how successful you are, there's probably at least one area where roadblocks are keeping you from fully achieving your goals. Fortunately, you've come to the right place. Every expert I interview on this podcast is different, but they all have one thing in common. They know how to fix problems that keep people stuck. Our discussion may raise some questions in your mind, and if there's anything that you'd like to discuss with me, I will give you some links at the end of the show for you to contact me. Today, I'm pleased to welcome Peter Friedman. Peter is a social media visionary and veteran with 30 years of experience in the space. He's the founder, chairman, and CEO of LiveWorld, a trusted social media partner to the world's largest brands, including the number one companies in retail, CPG, pharmaceutical, financial, and travel services. Peter has provided multiple global brands with strategic social media guidance and delivered hundreds of social media programs for them in multiple countries and languages. These include Apple's industry-wide social network, Apple Link, Mini Cooper's Members Lounge, Unilever's Dove Campaign for Real Beauty, HBO's original show character-driven website community, the American Express Members Project, and Walmart's Facebook and Twitter programs. Prior to LiveWorld, Peter was vice president and general manager of Apple's Internet Services Division, overseeing the creation and management of social media services such as Apple Inc., eWorld, AOL, and Salon. During his 12-year tenure at Apple, Peter's responsibilities also included managing business systems, marketing, and product line management in the Macintosh division. He brings a unique combination of strategic thinking, vision, and hands-on operational skill, as well as a blend of marketing, social media, and technology expertise. Peter is also the author of The CMO's Social Media Handbook, a step-by-step guide for leading marketing teams in the social media world, a practical toolkit and crash course in social media theory that helps big brand marketing leaders learn how to strategize and execute a long-term social media plan in order to create dialogue and deepen customer relationships. Peter earned his MBA from the Harvard Business School and bachelor's degree in American history from Brown University. Peter, welcome to the show.
Thanks. It's great to be here.
So I know we talked a little bit before we started recording this episode about business plateaus. In particular, if you have been in your role as a business leader for a while, sometimes facing an unexpected plateau or one that you can't figure out how to smash can be quite frustrating. With your background, I wondered if we could talk a little bit about why the customer experience is so critical to smashing a business plateau.
Well, that's a really good question because, you know, when you're in business, ultimately it comes down to the customer. Everybody says that, but it's not that easy to put that into practice because, you know, you've got everything going on everywhere else and, you know, it's always back to basics, the customer. But as you grow a business and you're doing everything, you often lose sight of it. You know, Steve Jobs, who I had the good experience to work for, he said, you always start with the customer experience and then you back your way to the technology. And if you're not thinking through the customer experience, what they're actually having have happen to them, whether it's the use of a product or service, how they buy it, or how they experience your marketing, then you're not really focused on what's going to ultimately drive your business. And often, we're talking about plateaus and things like that, people get stuck because they're looking the wrong way. They're just not looking at what the customer experience is. And that's true for everybody. It's happened to us numerous times. So when you do that, you're in much better shape. And in today's world, with things moving so fast and so many choices in the fluid context of the internet and social media, what that customer experiences is moving fast too. So not only do you have to look that way, you have to kind of keep your eye on it all the time, and you have to recognize that your vision may obscure seeing how it's changing.
Yeah, I'm sure that your vision can certainly obscure how it's changing. I wondered actually if we could talk a little bit about what you did when it happened to you, that you were not keeping your eye on the customer experience.
Oh, gosh. Well, let's see. I got my Apple experiences on that. I got my LiveWorld experiences on that. Well, I'll give you an example. So after the world crashed in 2001, 2003, and keep in mind that we are the only social media online community company here today that was, you know, really operating, established and operating in the late 90s. Everybody else went away, hadn't started, or aren't doing it anymore. And everything crashed. 800 out of 1,000 internet companies went out of business. That's a plateau too, but that's actually not the plateau I'm going to talk about. So we just did everything we could to get business, and we found ourselves building out very customized community websites. And that was good. That got us going, and we'd just do anything to stay alive. That's one way to smash a plateau.
And so many we're doing that. By the way, many people do that because they have to.
Yeah. So we're doing that. And that worked, and that kept us in business, and we were doing things. And then the world came back, and the world of social media came back. I was one day at some sort of trade show and had a lot to do with social media. And this is somewhere in 2005 or 6 or something. And I'm looking around, there's like 1,500 people in the room. And I'm like, where did all you come from? You weren't here 3 years ago. And then we began to struggle because we had a whole new set of competitors. Digital agencies were building these websites and getting a lot more money than we were. They were custom websites, and everybody knew they were going to get thrown out in 6 to 12 months, so they didn't care about them after that, where I was stuck with people expecting in a platform. And we kept trying to build this to do what people wanted, but the reality is the market had divided into customers who really were willing to do custom and pay a lot of money for it, and people didn't want that, and they needed a leveraged platform. And I was caught in the middle of that. And we were so busy trying to do well for our customers that we didn't see fast enough that they had really morphed into two types of beings, and we weren't serving either one well. And this manifested itself when we started releasing things for clients that didn't meet our quality standards, and not on purpose, but the pressure on some of our employees that even though we kept talking about quality, they felt so pressed to get it out, still had to get the revenue. And that's when I realized that everybody well-intended had mangled what we were doing into a level that wasn't meeting our value-oriented vision, because we gave something to people, didn't work very well, and then we had to fix it, and we fixed it, but we gave them a bad experience. And I realized that it wasn't going to work to keep trying to do what we were doing better, that we had to either go left and be more custom like a digital agency, get a lot more money for it and get to throw it out, or go right and go back to standard platforms where we had been 6 years before, but that we wouldn't have survived if we had stayed that. So we went right and we decided we'd standardize the platforms and that we would move our clients to it. And bit by bit we did. And if they didn't want to do it, we helped them move to something else. But it took a bad customer experience to wake us up and a commitment to good customer experience to recognize that doing what we were doing better, which we could have done, wouldn't solve the core problem. I guess we had to smash the plateau of what we were doing and change what we were doing to deliver the vision and value that we wanted so that customer experience we wanted would be what it should be.
Based on that experience and also everything you know and do with your background, what kind of advice would you offer somebody who is in that place like you were in like 2005 or so, where you had to wake up and see what was going on with the customer experience? Like, where do you start?
Okay, well, you start by laying out a clear set of goals and vision for your company. We fortunately had that. And somebody's got to be the guardian of that. And that's ultimately the CEO. And then you may enlist aides, but you've got to be the guardian of that. And then the next thing you do is at least once a year, no less than once a year, as a group, you have to look at everything you're doing and saying, is this working? Is this driving to our vision and our goals? We don't want to be, you know, too volatile here, but we've just got to recognize things can be changing. And somebody, a subset of that group, maybe just you, should sort of ask that question every quarter and say, is what we're doing and the way we're doing it holding to our vision and direction and value and delivering the customer experiences we want? And have those customer experiences been influenced or changed in some way. Like an example I gave you, the world had changed. And so what we've been doing very well for everybody for, say, 4 years wasn't going to cut it anymore because of how things had changed and what they needed.
And what kinds of results have you seen when companies have taken these steps?
Well, number one, you invigorate your team, because the team of people that were making these things, whether they came out well, a couple times they didn't, they were not happy because they knew that what we were doing wasn't going the right way. So by changing it and getting it more focused and aligned to the customer experience, they could be excited and focused and sort of freed to do a great quality job of a focused set of things that matched up and got good customer feedback on. So they weren't pushing a rock up a hill, you know, that was going to come back down. So that's number one. Number two, you know, you have happy customers who not only are willing to, but delight in giving you references instead of unhappy customers that keep asking you what happened. Number three, you know, you have more revenue and more profit because the profit is in the happiness of the customers, so they're willing to pay you more than it costs you to do it. And generally, in an example I gave you, there's a lot of inefficiencies when you're not aligned well to a good customer experience. So your costs go down, your revenue goes up, your customers are happy, and your employees are motivated.
Could you talk a little bit about what it means to have a social team?
Like a social media team?
In your book, you talk about going social starts with a social team.
Yes. So first off, you have to know you have to do it. You have to be focused. And you have to be dedicated. And you have to assign people to it in a dedicated way, because this is not just some additional channel or some offshoot. It is the fundamental way that most companies' customers are going to be experiencing the brand and sort of living and knowing about the brand and telling other people about it and interacting with the company. So you really have to focus on it, especially because for most companies, unless they're like brand new, it's very different from what they've been doing for a very long time. So people have to be dedicated so they can be focused. And then they have to be encouraged and appreciated for doing things differently than how you might have been doing them in your marketing or your customer service by operating in the fluid environment that your customers are really in. And then they have to kind of operate with a dialogue and collaborative relationship that is emblematic of what you're trying to create with your customers as the experience that your company and your customers create together.
So what might be an example of a change in behavior that an employee might need to make how that employee is suddenly needs to be social?
They have to have conversations with the customers rather than broadcasting things to them one way. And you have to say, look, this is about stimulating conversations among customers and with customers where we both talk and we both listen, a real conversation, and build a relationship rather than just having one-way messaging where you don't really learn about and engage and allow yourself to be driven by the customer. And that sounds like, well, of course we want to do that, but most companies don't do that. And after, you know, 50, 60 years of mass marketing and one-way broadcasting, cultures of a lot of companies and a lot of the marketing world is what's a great ad, you know, what got a lot of ratings, even what got shared a lot, not did we actually talk to people, learn about them, and build an experience through dialogue.
Is there an example you might be willing to share of a company that has been around for 50 or 60 years and has made that shift in actually communicating with customers, learning about customers' feelings and customers' wants and needs, and doing it in a dialogue as opposed to just broadcast?
Well, noting that, you know, we work for a lot of Fortune 100 companies, and if they're a Fortune 100 company, they're likely, unless they're, you know, a tech internet company, have been around for a while. So it's a big transition. And I'll give you two examples. Walmart is a big client of mine. I know most of our clients don't want us going into too much detail about them, so this is all kind of – you could find this publicly if you look for it. So this is the biggest company in the world, and you know, everybody thinks about this big box company and it's impersonal or something like that. And you know, they have a lot of you know, advertising and things like that. But with social media, they grew themselves to the number one brand in the U.S. on Facebook with 30-something million likes. And they did it without a single kind of like me for a coupon type of a thing, which is what most do. They couldn't do it because they're everyday low prices. And what they did is they didn't just talk about products. This is for a few years. It's all changing. But they didn't just talk about products. They talked about experiences. They didn't just put up here, buy this. They talked about what are you going to do with it. And they created emotional engagement. And they talked about many themes, including community outreach and the U.S. military and what are families doing and things like that. Now, the interesting thing about this is many people will think, boy, I wouldn't have expected that at Walmart. But if you're among the 180 million people that go into a Walmart every week, a great many of them say, of course I expected that from Walmart. Because Walmart's roots from Sam Walton, and you read this in his biographies, that it all comes down to the conversation between the store associate and the customer. And is that a good customer experience? And therefore they come back. So all we really did with Walmart is help them take their roots and bring it back through social media. And they were rewarded for that with a huge a fan base and, for a while, you know, one of the most engaged brands on Facebook, and how that affected a lot of things. Now, there's been a lot of changes in Facebook. It's moved to more, you know, ad-oriented, but they still tend to be more that way than other retailers. And they're looking at other things they're going to be doing as these mediums evolve, where they can create great one-to-one experiences. So that's Walmart. So another client happens to be my clients, these two examples. I can come up with non-client ones if you want, is AbbVie, a pharmaceutical company. It's actually a new one because it's spun out of Abbott. And they are building out a multiple different presences around different disease states, really helping people learn about and manage different types of disease conditions and things like that. And it's quite powerful because in the world of healthcare, it's transforming from what's called heads to beds in the industry, where everybody's worrying about like how many patients throughput you have, to what is the patient experience. You just substitute patient for customer. And a lot of that comes down to dialogue. And in the world of healthcare, most people don't understand their illnesses. They don't know to take their pills. They don't know how to diagnose something. So AbbVie is doing a lot of work to help people just understand what they got so that they can get diagnosed, understand different types of treatment, get emotional support so they stick with it, and it really affects their lives. And that's an example of an industry transforming and how social media is at the center of it, because more dialogue helps patients understand and do better, and it helps healthcare providers help each other and help the patients better.
Now, for companies that might be smaller than some of the ones that the two examples you just described, if they don't have a whole lot of experience managing conversations on social media, is there a good way to get started with this process?
Yes. Well, read my book. And that's not hawking my book, because if you go to our website, you can download the entire book, the entire big book, as a PDF for free. And it lays out the whole thing. The critical thing, which goes back to your first question about like where we said dedicated people, is you have to commit to it. Now, all you have to – and a lot of people go, I don't have the time. And the way you have to think about it is I have the time to talk to customers when they come into my store, or if you're a B2B business or something, when I get them on the phone. And if I could get more of my customers, potential customers, just to have conversations with me, boy, I would go do that. Social media lets you do that. It could be Facebook, it could be Instagram, it could be messaging now. And so you have to say, am I willing to dedicate some resource to every day doing things that excite and delight my customers so they know more about me and I know more about them and I carry on that conversation? And there are small businesses, everything from a taco sauce manufacturer to a little wine retailer to whoever, who have used this and used it to leverage to take on companies, you know, 1,000 times their size. The internet and social media is the great leveler. A large corporation can be more personal, but a small company can have scale. So here's what you do. You start off and say, okay, what do I actually want to accomplish here? I want to talk to my conversations to customers so they know more about this, this, and this. Okay, what am I going to do to make this distinctive? And that's basically a brand exercise. You got to sit there and say, what is my company all about? What do I want people to think? Are we about low prices? Are we about good inventory? Are we about great customer service? Are we about these values? Are we about the people who are the company? Just write that down. And write down like as if you're throwing a party. We say social media is the online party you're throwing for your customer. So what kind of a party do I want to throw? Is it an edgy party? Is it a rave? Is it a formal outing on a weekend like a business offsite? Is it a hip party? What kind of a party is it? And what kind of experience do I want to create for people? And therefore, what are we going to talk about every day? And how am I going to highlight what my customers like? It doesn't have to be about your products. It just has to be things that will engage the interest of your customers. After all, they must have something in common if they're coming to you, some kind of a need they have or where they're located or the kind of people they are. And you just play on that and build out a personality around that. And do it every day. Don't try to be on every social media channel all at once. Pick one and go deep on that and let people know about it and engage your customers that way. And it'll take a while to build up. You don't need huge numbers. You just need customers to know about you, engage with you, know about what you're doing and what you can do for them.
It sounds great. And I'm sure that is very transformative if you do it one small step at a time.
Yes, and you don't have to take on the whole world with it right away. It's more important to be thoughtful and focused. You know, and I have all these big company clients, and sometimes they come in and they want to do everything all at once. And we go, do you have the budget for that? Usually they don't. And sometimes they do, yes. And I go, that's great. We're going to go in steps because it's a learning, evolving experience. If you try to do everything all at once, you know, the best case is you're going to have the Big Bang Theory. Your universe is going to explode on you anyway. Go in steps and learn as you go because you won't really know how your customers are going to engage with you and what's going to work till you start doing it.
Yeah. And the other thing is that people are sort of get very excited about the idea of a breakthrough. But in reality, breakthroughs happen after many, many small steps.
That's totally true. And, you know, I get this all the time. I mean, we've been doing this longer than anybody, and they're always saying, what's the magic bullet? And what's this and what's that? And I go, the magic bullet, there isn't a magic bullet. You got to go step by step. You're building relationships. You want some strategy, but you've got to be in the field tactics. It's battle by battle, step by step. And, you know, every customer counts. And you want to build a solid foundation. And that's a really important element of this. It's not like I got some big hot ad, everybody sees it, goes away, and then I got to do it again. You're building a set of loyalty and relationships. The essence of social media, which is the vision of our company, is the transformative power of online dialogue and relationships. You're doing this to build relationships over time, not an impulse thing immediately. I mean, you can do that too. That's okay. But if you want the full power of it, you focus on the dialogue and building those relationships, and then those people pull in other people, pull in other people, and over time you build a following that is strong and will help you build your business for you. You know, sprinkle promotions as you go. But ultimately, you want to build a customer set that feels socially connected to you, and with that, they will help you build your business. Your customers are your best salespeople.
Absolutely. And then also, if you are building something step by step that can impact your company in a positive direction over the long term, that's really how to smash a plateau.
Yes, it is. And again, for smaller businesses, I want to say you know, probably want to go on Facebook. That's the one that most people go on. And you want to run ads on it. It's really inexpensive and really effective. And a lot of analysis is showing this is the most effective way to advertise anyway. And you can do it. So you go step by step, a little here, a little there. You learn how to do it. You make it better and it builds.
So speaking of going step by step and smashing plateaus, Peter, whom do you know personally who's been really successful at smashing plateaus?
Well, the two people in my life that are probably the best examples of that are Steve Jobs, who I worked for and with very closely when I was in the Macintosh division. And because everybody knows that story. They don't know the real story. I was in the room. The movies and the books, they're not right. But, you know, he was there and, you know, he was nervous and concerned and all kinds of things all the time, but had a vision and a commitment and, you know, transformed everything. And then the other one would be my father, who's no longer with us, and who's my inspiration. And he grew up in his family company, which I thought I was going to go to, in the printing and publishing industry. And then around 50, he decided that he was somewhat fed up with his brothers, his older brothers, who they all three ran the company together. And this is, you know, in the 60s and early 70s and, you know, probably today's numbers, a tens of millions of dollar company, not hundreds of millions, but not like mom and pop. So he decided to leave when he was 50 years old. And other than college and World War II, he had never known anything but this family company. So he left. And my grandfather worried that the wives would break up the brothers to put a buy-sell agreement in place that wasn't the wives. That ensured the company would stay together. And if brother left, he'd get bought out. And my father thought he'd get bought out for a pretty good amount of money. Unfortunately, my grandfather didn't expect inflation, and the deal was such that what my father thought would be many millions of dollars amounted to a couple hundred thousand he'd get over time. So here he had left the company. He had started making arrangements for printing presses and bindery machines, and all of a sudden he discovered the money he thought he had to do it wasn't there. Talk about stalling out on the plateau. Everything in his life he had let, you know, go of business-wise, career-wise to do this, and all of a sudden it wasn't there. When this happened and he called Timpson's Presses, the printing machine company in England, and Beale Manufacturing, the binding machine company in Germany, and said, well, I'm going to not be able to do this. Both of them independently said, Arthur, we've worked with you for years. You've designed patents and helped us with our business. You've built a strong relationship. We believe in you. And we're just going to give you the credit you need to do this. You'll pay us when you have the money. And we're talking about machines that then were millions of dollars each. So, you know, you're talking like $10, $20 million machines now. And then he went ahead. And the lesson here is, if you build relationships, you work with people and you do well by them, because you should do it, it will come back to you. And the strengths of the relationships he built, he was able to start an entirely new company on the strength of that and that alone. And he did. And that company went on and was successful for 10, 15 years. To me, that is an inspiration and a lesson, because I was at Apple for many years. And when I was looking at leaving Apple, I was quite nervous about it. I had been there a very long time. I was kind of a rock star there. The place kept reorganizing, but I was, you know, pretty insured of doing things and being able to do things. But I was tired of it, which is a whole other story. And I kind of wanted to leave. And I wasn't sure if I could do it. And then I decided I would do it. The moment of deciding to do it was on the TV. They were talking about the Java language. It's going to be X, Y, and Z. And I went, oh, you have no idea. It's going to be like this. An online community is going to be massively bigger with everybody in the world connected. This is in 1996. And, you know, I should start this company, shouldn't I? I said to myself, looking at the TV out loud. And my golden retriever then, Sandy the golden retriever, got up from the other side of the room when I said that, walked over to me, put her head in my lap, and nodded. I thought, all right, I'm going to do it. And then I built a fairly conservative business plan, and I negotiated a package with Apple. And I thought, I'm going to get funding within 3 months or stop. And then if I don't have a prototype in 6 months, I'll stop. So I have plenty of time to get a job. And then I was talking with my co-founder, Jenna Will, as we were looking at starting this company. And we were being kind of conservative about it. You know, we didn't want to do it if we weren't short of the money. And all of a sudden, all these people we had worked with in the online services that we had built at Apple, but Apple at that time had canceled, from around the world, 70 moderators, online moderators, about 20 other people, started writing us and saying, we don't know what you're doing, but we believe in you. If you're starting a company, we'll work with you for free for 6 months. And we looked at that and said, this is a rare group of people, and we should just start. And we took the little 12-page plan and the conservative, we'll wait till we get the money idea, and put it in the briefcase. And I did it, and I knew I could do it because I watched my father do it on the strength of relationships. And we had these 70 people and another 30 people that would do it. And they all came together. And we knew these people online, but we hadn't met even half of them in person. But we had been working with them. And so they all came together, and you know, the guy in Australia noticed when the guys in India weren't going to do something right. We caught that. We're going to do it right. And then we needed software. I called up this guy, Gaston Bastiens, who I'd worked with at Apple, who was a quarterdeck. And I said, I'm starting this company, and I just need some chat software for free for a few months. He says, okay. And then I called up another guy at Web Crossing, and I never knew him. And I just told him our story. And I said, it's cool. I'll do a press release, but I need you to lend me the software for a few months till I get started, and we'll have a relationship. He went, okay. And then I needed servers. And I wrote Ted Leonsis, who was then the head of America Online, who I had helped in my career, and said, I need servers. And I wrote this guy, James Isaac, who had worked with me at Apple, and he went to Concentric and ISP. I said, I need servers. Well, they were both great, but Ted was running a big corporation by then. So this was Friday afternoon. He didn't write back and say yes till Monday. James wrote me back Saturday afternoon. So we got onto his servers on Sunday. And a guy at Yahoo that had worked for me gave us a link, and a guy at Netscape. All these people on the strengths of relationships, that's it. There wasn't anything about it that they were getting paid or they could count on. All these people helped us start our company on the strengths of our relationships, just like my father had. And on the basis of that, we started the company on the strength of online dialogue and relationships we had built that way. That's what the company does for our customers, and we even built a culture around that. Thanks, Dad.
Thank you for sharing that, Peter.
And I just want to tell everybody who's listening, if you're not building relationships, to help and work with other people on that strength, start doing it now. Don't think about who's going to help you. Think about how you can add value to these other people's lives and create value with them. If you do that, that genuine strength will help other people, and then they'll be there for you when you want to build something. They just will be. And you don't have to calculate it. You just have to do it. And it works. It worked for my father. It worked for me. It can work for you. That should be my new book.
So speaking of your new book, what's next for you?
Well, we're very excited. You know, we've been doing this for a long time. We've got a really strong company. I'm very proud that we're one of the only social media companies that certainly among the ones that aren't like, you know, Facebook and LinkedIn, but, you know, smaller ones whose customers value what we do enough to pay us more than it costs us, because we have a track record of profitability and being cash positive. Right now we're doing all this investing on purpose, so we're not, but broadly we have a solid business and strong business model. But we haven't been growing super fast, and we want to do that. And we're really excited because we're now entering the age of messaging, and that's courtesy of Facebook Messenger and WeChat and all these different messaging apps, where messaging is going to become the new ecosystems that take over kind of the world, bigger than social networking, certainly bigger than traditional social media. And this opens up a sort of a whole new frontier. And we're really excited because we started this company with chat, and messaging in the form of chat. We were writing chatbots 20 years ago. And we've just released a new SaaS platform for conversation management. The first time in a number of years, we're letting other people license our proprietary software. It's really cool. Our current customers, these big Fortune 100 companies, most of them are already using it and love it. We have new people we've never dealt with before who are using it. And we have a whole suite of services that go with it. You can buy just the software or the services or both together. And we're excited because it gives us a whole new opening to grow the company and add value and create things for people as this new wave comes along. And that you know, will affect businesses and people and change their customer experiences. And we're at the center of it. And it's like a new frontier and exciting. And, you know, I get a lot of credit for reinventing my company and surviving. I'll take that credit. But at the core, it's always been this vision I told you, always about the transformative power of online dialogue and relationships. And we pivot a lot to the context and that customer experience. And this is a really big pivot for the industry and the world into messaging, and we're right there. So we're really excited.
That's great. Peter, how can listeners learn more about this, about you, what you're up to, and follow you?
Liveworld.com is our website. You go to that. There's all kinds of things there. Everything from our new software platform to our services to our thought leadership on messaging and chatbots and healthcare and lots of things. You can find my book there and download. You can go buy it on Amazon too, but if you just want the PDF, it's there. And And I'll be writing new books and other things on the age of messaging over the next couple of years. You can follow me on Twitter, Peter Friedman. I haven't had a big Twitter presence in a while, but we've decided to change that, and we're going to be building that up. And you can follow me on Instagram, too, and I encourage you to do that because that's another side of me. I am just getting that started, but I'm a fine art photographer, and the Twitter and Instagram will play together over time.
Sounds great. Well, Peter, thanks so much for taking some time to come on Smashing the Plateau today and talk about the importance of customer experience and the value of relationships to help you smash a plateau in business and probably in life, too.
Well, I'm really delighted to be here. I think this is just a wonderful concept, and I think if people can adopt this, Smashing the Plateau, as a way of doing business, not a casual, you know, I just smash everything, but a thoughtful, I want to get from here to there. I got to keep moving. I got to keep heading up. I'm going to keep hitting plateaus. But every time I hit the plateau, I'm going to smash that and leap to the next level. If you keep doing that, and as my father said, it's never too late. And he also said, never give up. You'll do it.
That's great. My guest today has been Peter Friedman, Chairman and CEO of LiveWorld. Thanks so much, Peter, for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Smashing the Plateau, the podcast produced by Tend Strategic Partners. I hope you enjoyed our discussion. Have you ever hit a plateau in your own life or career? If so, let's talk. It would be my pleasure to take you through one of our free half-hour discovery sessions where we'll get to the bottom of what might be keeping you stuck and how to move things forward. Just give me a call at 212-731-0770. That's 212-731-0770. You never know what you might find out.